Hello, welcome to the 16th episode and the last one in the season of the Dragonspan podcast about fantasy writing, sci-fi writing, and other genre-specific writing. My name is Martin, I'm a fantasy writer myself, and I have spent years attending and leading workshops working with aspiring writers to help them understand how to improve their texts. I thought I might share my experience and give you some advice on how to develop your worlds, build your stories and characters, and help you write your own fantasy or sci-fi saga. So let's get to it. Name of this week's episode is Pace Yourself. And I will be talking about pacing in your stories, creating tension and all the good stuff that comes along with it. The deeper you dive into this topic, you'll hear stuff like conflict and goal and tension, and it can get really confusing since all of this feel rather abstract and kind of hard to grasp when you start your story itself. Right. Especially hard if you try one of these like tools to, you know, for character development or just like character definition. And, you know, the tool presents you with questions like, what is the inner conflict of your character? And you are there looking at the question like, I expected help. I didn't expect this kind of Spanish Inquisition. The thing is, you usually kind of know the answers to these questions, but the answers are hard to put into words since you see those as scenes and moments in your story. You can kind of understand them, but in sort of different kind of a, you know, creation language. I am currently in the process of a last round of editing my new novel, and, you know, I say it like I am actually working on it, which is, you know, I am taking a 2-week break after editing the first 2 chapters for some reason. I really hate editing. But that's not the main reason I'm putting this off for so long. The real reason is pacing. Advancing the plot at a certain speed and mixing up fast-paced and slow-paced scenes is the main thing that makes your story sort of flow. And I have a problem with that because I need to switch the scenes around, and I'm just kind of putting it off because I don't really want to, you know, it's big change. I have to basically switch the chapters around, you know, add some scenes and stuff like that. And it's a lot of work, especially because you're kind of denying your own creative sort of flow in the first place. I wrote it in a certain way, but I know with my experience that the pacing is off. Now I have to go against my own sort of creation or creative process to fix it. And that can be painful, but it is necessary. Many aspiring writers mistake this sort of, you know, switching of the pacing as switching between action and non-action moments. And it is more than that. Even a sword fight on a burning building with, you know, in the middle of a magical hurricane can be boring and, you know, badly paced for that matter. Think of The Hobbit, the moment when the dwarves fight Smaug in the lair in the mountain. It is like an hour-long scene of them fighting and just, you know, running away. And the thing is, it doesn't really change anything. The Smaug goes on his merry way and destroys the village, and dwarves take over the mountain, and it doesn't really move the plot along. It's just like a fleshy action scene at the end of the movie. And you might think, you know, yeah, but an action scene can be entertaining. You know, a sword fight in a hurricane on a burning building is not entertaining because it's written badly or there's not enough action. If I was writing it, I could have, you know, write it so well, I would have glued my reader to every single word. Well, you know, yes and no. It is not just about the action. Many people mistake it because usually something significant happens in action scenes, you know, like a hero wins or loses or learns he's a son of the main antagonist or something like that. But the most important part of any action scene are the stakes that are in place. That is why Man of Steel, for example, is boring as hell. I don't mean the entire movie, obviously, but I mean the action. You know, every punch meant nothing. It's Superman fighting at a Superman's, you know, and, you know, when they hit each other, it's just like nothing happens, just a lot of CGI and destruction in the background. That's pretty much it. I mean, I get it. Based on movies, it feels like pacing is sort of the easiest thing to manage in your story. You know, present the character, action, quiet moment, action, some sort of realization, and then big action. Done. Pacing is complete. That is how it usually goes in blockbusters. Well, the thing is action actually action? Is your action moving the plot along, or is it just a lot of CGI? The most important thing, actually, for managing pacing and to, you know, creating the proper pacing is realizing what your story in its entirety is about. Let's go back to our example with Alex, you know, the orphan with mysterious magic tattoo, his teenage crush Brianna, his unknown origin, the magic ancestry he uncovers along the way, stuff like that. You know, stuff we talked about in previous episodes. Anyway, what is the story really about? Well, that is really up to you, but for now, let's say, you know, let's go with a classic zero to hero idea. So the story is about a journey of Alex from being a carefree boy living in a, you know, a village at the edge of a map in this idyllic life, to a hero that saves the entire world and defeats the ancient Eve. This is the story. And along the way, Alex needs to find courage, accept responsibility, put the needs of the world before his own needs and wants, and, you know, find peace with that decision. He's not just Alex anymore. To truly become a hero, he sort of needs to open himself to his heritage and become this ancient magical warrior, or, you know, something like that. That should be the story of Alex we want in our text. Now, let's take a look at the first chapter in which we introduce Alex and his life in a village. There are a million ways to do this. You know, million ways this can be presented. But I'm going to try a little experiment here. One version with no pacing, or just of only a little bit of it, sort of a boring version. And the other one with brisk pacing, utilizing conflict, tension, and, you know, all the abstract stuff we talked about in the beginning of the episode. Alex is sitting on a stone on a mountain or a hill, looking down at his village, you know, enjoying the view with the forests and hills and mountains and stuff like that in the background. And he's thinking about being a foster child, reminiscing about his past, not knowing his parents, being taken as a foster child by, I don't know, a litter worker, let's say, and learning the trade and how to work and help in a house. He stands up and goes into the village, walking through the main street. He greets his neighbors, meets his friends, and, you know, sees Brianna across the road. She gives him a shy smile, and, you know, he thinks about how beautiful she is and how much he wants to be, you know, holding her hand or something. He goes home and his foster parents are like, do the work after, you know, thinking about your life, and no rush. Did you have breakfast? And he starts working with the letter, but then hears some commotion and sees the village being attacked. Doom, doom, doom. Okay, I know what you might be thinking. You know, when you visualize the scene or the chapter, it is not as bad as I make it out to be, right? It builds atmosphere, introduces the characters, you know, paints a picture of this quiet village on the edge of a map. It actually might be quite enjoyable, right? If you write it in a certain way. And all of those things, don't get me wrong, you know, the atmosphere, the sort of carefree feeling, these are all good and kind of needed and useful for the story. So, you know, what is the big deal with the pacing? Well, let's take a look at this first chapter from the perspective of the entire story. How did story of Alex move along? Did he find courage he needed? Or did he accept the responsibility? Not really. Is that a problem? I mean, the plot does not have to move all the time, right? And that is actually true. The plot does not have to move non-stop. But while it is paused, something should be going on. Maybe we can understand Alex a bit better while the plot is not moving that briskly. Did that happen in this first chapter? Not really. Alex in the scene was sort of a device that presented the world through his eyes and gave us some background. He wasn't much of a main character. He just, you know, he didn't move a plot along as the main character should. He was just the camera of sorts. And, you know, that is not a good start of your novel because, you know, you want to captivate the reader. And world building, as fantastic as it might be, is never as captivating as sort of, you know, connecting with the main character. That goes much deeper than going, ooh, ah, beautiful world. Okay, I'm going to try this again, but this time I will introduce a little tension, a bit of conflict, while trying to keep the atmosphere and all the, you know, other stuff about lovely life of boyish Alex unscathed. Okay, so Alex is sitting on a stone above a village. He is looking at the view, the forest, the village, the hills, and there is a smell. This awful stench is in the air. Has been for a couple of days, and everyone was complaining about it. It was very faint at first, but now it is everywhere and it is attacking Alex like it was a wave of water just rushing through the air. There are voices behind Alex and he turns around. He sort of separated, drifted off from the group of his friends to take a look at the view for a few minutes. All the while, his friends are studying their new find, a dead deer. One of the friends found it and brought others to take a look because it's weird and it smells awful. And this is a fantastic opportunity to present friends of Alex's and his social circle. You know, one of the friends can be a little squeamish, the other one can be a bit of a know-it-all, you know, saying like, oh, this is normal deer carcass, I don't know what you're talking about. And the other one can be sort of this, you know, overcompensating one, poking a stick at it, something like that. I can present Alex's stance in his social circle as well. He went to take a look at the view and no one really cared. And that says a lot about his position in this group. Every one of them has seen a dead deer, sure, because, you know, they grew up in a village at the edge of a forest. But there is something strange about this particular one. Dark tendrils seem to kind of be growing out of a gory wound on a side. And, you know, girls are huddled aside together. There might be some teasing with, you know, boys chasing girls with a stick they poked at the deer and, you know, like, ooh, it's gross, don't touch me, stuff like that. Nobody tries that with Brianna. She looks at deer with actually some concern in her eyes. The smell is awful, strange, and she knew about it. You know, she smelled it in a village faintly. But now it's here and it's very strong and it feels like it's emanating from this weird carcass. And, you know, she grew up in a village as well, so she knows how a decaying animal should smell like. And this is not that. It is somewhat more appalling, somewhat evil. And it feels like she's the only one realizing it when looking at the carcass, but then her gaze meets Alex's. Alex is yet again looking at her like she's a gift from heaven, you know, thinking about how awesome and beautiful and stuff like that. I can do like a 3 lines about it. But then he scratches his hand. It kind of breaks his concentration, breaks his train of thoughts. You know, there is a tattoo, this mysterious magical tattoo hidden under the sleeve, and it throbbed for some time now. Well, you know, it started when the smell appeared in the village. But now the tattoo almost hurts when he's standing next to the deer. They poke the deer yet again with a stick and it twitches. Everyone starts yelling and the group kind of scatters around in this sort of playful panic. You know, this just kind of circle just breaks apart around the deer, you know, yelling like, ah, it's alive, it's alive. They split and Alex ends up in a pair with Brianna. You know, they hide somewhere in a tight space. They are all close and stuff and her scent overpowers the stench and Alex can only see her, smell her, feel her so close, kind of pushing against him. And, you know, they eyes lock and they realize they are not just kids anymore. And it's all very intense and very new to Alex. And Brianna is this fair maiden type everyone talks about, you know, this gem of the village. Everyone sees as perfect and smiling and amazing and, you know, optimistic and wishes her a happy ending. This sort of star of the county down. down type, you know? And he's just Alex. And as she's leaning closer for a kiss, he pulls back. How could he kiss her right now? It is too important and blah, blah, blah. It is the most important moment of his life up to this, you know, up to this day. He never felt something more important than this, which kind of provides me with this ways to introduce Alex as a person that, you know, lives his little tiny life. Because, you know, being in a moment where he has to kiss his crush is all of a sudden the most important thing, meaning everything, his sort of orphan status and everything else, is just something he's used to and he's not making a big deal out of it because the kiss is now the big deal. It presents me with the opportunity to introduce Alex as a person, you know, his love interest plus the fact that he lacks the courage to do anything about his teenage feelings, stuff like that. So it is just this tiny bit of conflict improved my pacing quite a lot because all of a sudden there's something going on. So he chooses to pull back and not to kiss Brianna. And Brianna is disappointed and, you know, runs away. And a group of friends heads home, you know, take a lad one last look at the deer and it's still dead. It's still in the forest. So they head home, you know, kind of bored with the new toy. And as they leave, Alex kind of holds back, takes one more look at the deer, feeling the tattoo, and it all feels too strange. And as he leaves, the deer carcass can, you know, let's say, open the eye, you know, that provides attention. Something evil is going on. And, you know, in the village, Alex goes home and starts working in his father's leather shop. Again, fantastic opportunity to present his family situation. Does he tell his father about deer or about the tattoo throbbing? They had to know about the tattoo. You know, they took care of him from early childhood. So does he tell them? Does he tell them about the fact he almost kissed Brianna, the fairest of all in the village? You know, this provides me with an angle in which I can present his family situation, you know, his relationship with this foster family. But does it work in the story of Alex? You know, he feels a little odd maybe, so from childhood as an orphan, so maybe he doesn't talk to them. But on the other hand, there had to be other orphans in the village. I mean, it's a medieval village, you know, the healthcare wasn't great. So, you know, what does he do? Maybe he won't tell about deer, but maybe as he works on leather and his foster father just kind of stumbles in and starts working too, maybe Alex asks this out of place question all of a sudden, like, hey, foster dad, how did you and the foster mom start dating? Or, you know, something like that. Now, again, there are a lot of opportunities here to kind of, you know, just the names. What does Alex call his foster parents? You know, what is their reaction to the question? The foster dad can say something like, concentrate on your work and don't bother. Or he can go like, how many times have I told you to call me dad? You know, all of this can provide either conflict or sort of resolve one. All of a sudden, during the man talk, you know, there is a commotion in a village. They both go outside and discover that the faint smell that has been hanging over the village for days is now not faint at all. The awful stench is everywhere now, attacking them. Alex sees Brianna across the street and they share this slightly panicked look. Then the monster appears. Alex does not turn and run away as the rest of the villagers, as he should. He grabs a leatherworking knife and is ready to face the monster. You know, he might die right here and right there, right? But, you know, so what will he do? And all of a sudden, this exact moment is the most important thing. Not the kiss, not the teenage crush. All of a sudden, this is the most important moment of his life up to this day. So what will he do? Let's say he runs towards Brianna, gives her a quick kiss, a sort of a reparation, and turns around to face the monster. End of the chapter. Okay, maybe I would have sort of stretched this into two chapters and break it after the deer opens the eye or something. But, you know, what is the difference here? What is the difference between the chapter version of a chapter I talked about a few minutes ago and this one? I introduced Alex, his village, his friends and family, and small town idyllic atmosphere. I did all that in both versions. So what is the difference? difference here. This second version of the chapter one has more impact of the entire story of Alex. You know, I made him learn something and find some courage he needed to become a hero. I moved his story along. He's one step closer to becoming a hero that is going to defeat the ancient evil at the end of the book. And, you know, let's break it apart a bit. You know, let's talk about, let's say, tension. The mystery of the ominous smell, the mystery of the strangely dead deer. Something is looming over Alex and the village. Not necessarily dangerous yet, but it is there. There is inner conflict of Alex. You know, Alex is struggling with his position in relationship to Brianna and his own position in his social circle. And, you know, he has this idea about how courageous he is, because every teenage boy pretty much does. And he's disappointed with his actions, because he turns out he's not as courageous as he expected him to be. So there's a conflict between the vision of himself as Alex and Alex being a, you know, a boy who is not always courageous. So he learned something. And there's outside conflict as well. Brianna is pissed off because Alex was a coward. Plus some conflicts about Alex and the society, Alex and the family, you know, tattoo coming to life, stuff like that. Awesome, right? I can keep adding more ideas, you know, more conflict and tension and inner conflict, outside conflict, more stuff. And many aspiring authors actually do. A number of them subconsciously feel the lack of conflict and pacing and, you know, add it, which is fantastic. The problem is, it is fairly easy to keep adding stuff, but not so easy to resolve them. That is the main issue here. Everything you add needs to be resolved some way. And this is where many aspiring authors kind of lose their pace and lose their flow, because all of a sudden the resolution is not always as, I would say, you know, full of action as introducing the conflict or keeping conflict alive. In the next few chapters, I should revisit those conflicts I introduced in the first one and kind of resolve them as best I could within the flow of the story. That is the hard part, you know. It doesn't have to be resolved in some cathartic way, though. You know, it doesn't have to be a big, bombastic, huge resolution that changes Alex altogether. But it should affect his character at least a little bit. You know, like, it doesn't have to be that all of Alex's friends, you know, see him as he defeats the monster and he, you know, they cheer and name him their king or something. It doesn't have to be like that. It could be as easy as Alex fighting the monster and having a close call, being saved by a friend he didn't count on helping him at all. And all of a sudden, Alex realizes that he chose not to be an important part of the social circle of friends, and they respected it. What he thought was animosity or dislike turned out to be understanding. You know, on the hill, he wanted to take a look at the view, and they didn't count him into the, you know, social happening right now for a few minutes. But it wasn't because they didn't want to, it was just because they understood he wanted to be alone. And this is the first time he realizes it, and it is a resolution of the conflict that was there. Or maybe, you know, he could not be helped by a friend when he needs a friend. You know, they never liked him anyway and they just tolerated him because he was the same age, stuff like that. It can go either way. Depends on the story of Alex. Right now, he can have a little bit disappointment with the friends to kind of realize that he's not just Alex anymore. Or he can realize it was all understanding and, you know, respect towards him, and he just didn't see it and realize that he has in fact all the goods to be the hero and to be liked by, you know, friends and stuff like that. All these moments, however, should play into the Alex's story, you know, and Brianna's story and the story of ancient hero Alex is to become. And if you choose to introduce sub subplots, they should have their own conflicts and tension and pacing. And that is pretty much it. The pacing is all about the story. Does the story move? If it doesn't, what does move in this particular chapter? If you can answer, you know, this question for every chapter and every scene, your pacing might be okay. You know, you either move the story along and move the character towards the goal, or rather towards the version of the character it should be by the end of the book, or you don't and you move something else around. Like, let's say Brianna has a situation that really helps us as a reader to understand her better. And that's the magic. So thank you for tuning in. This is the last episode of the year 2021. But I will be back next year with some more topics I want to talk to you about and more stuff about creating writing. I will be talking about world building a little bit more. Maybe I will do like a few episodes special on all the aspects of building your own world. And maybe I will go even deeper with the story of Alex. Maybe go chapter by chapter, you know, talking about the entire plot from start to finish as you would with an actual book. So enjoy the holidays, write whatever makes you happy, and hopefully you were at least a little bit inspired. Thank you for listening.